You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, my name is David Bryan, and this is Curiosity Invited, a podcast inspired by endless curiosity. Tune in for an open-minded conversation about interesting and important things. Hello, and welcome to Curiosity Invited. My name is David Bryan, and today I will be speaking with, Dr. Stephen Ross, who I know from and have spoken with numerous times from other contexts, but not on this program. And Stephen is a very interesting fellow, among other things. Stephen is an author, a lecturer, a teacher. He is the CEO and co-founder of the World Research Foundation, which you'll hear about in the podcast, as well as another business that he refers to as Less Complicated. That's the name. That's not that the business is less complicated. That's the name of the business. And all of this will be in the liner notes. He also is a counselor of matters spiritual and matters about people's well-being and business. Perhaps an odd combination, although you may feel differently after you hear about him. He'll be sitting in a room that is the World Research Foundation library, which can best be described as a receptacle of, and he is the keeper of, bypassed knowledge, and knowledge is. It's very, as you will see, it's an extraordinary room with an extraordinary collection of important and some of them very rare objects and texts. You know, I will say, if you met Stephen at a party, you would think, well, nice guy, interesting guy, funny guy, quirky, weird, can't believe all that stuff. And so I will say, I don't think there's any reason to doubt Stephen's description of his life and life events. You may not interpret them or agree with his version of what the sources of these of the goings on in his life, but especially surrounded by all of these physical objects, manifestations that have showed up as he's followed his hunches, intuitions, and the like, makes this a very interesting story worth paying attention to. So it was my great pleasure to speak with Stephen, and I hope you enjoy it. Dr. Stephen Ross, but I'm going to call you Steve.
Perfect.
Dr. Stephen Ross is a guest today. And as I said, the listeners have already heard my introduction of you. So we're just going to dive in. So I will tell you how, in addition to being the co-founder and CEO of the World Research Foundation and the president of Less Complicated, I think of you as, in terms of the work that you do, and the room that you're sitting in, which we'll speak about in a bit, is this a keeper of, and I loved it. I think it might've been from some of your writing, keeper of bypassed knowledge.
Yes.
And I think that that's just a wonderful way of putting it. And it's so right on. So I just, you can talk about it, but I will just, that background behind Stephen, I, for months, having been in meetings with him on various occasions, I assumed I was looking at a Zoom or other format platform generated background. And one day he got up from the chair and walked back there. So what we're looking at behind Stephen is a library, a magnificent library in which there are, well, you tell everybody, it is an extraordinary thing you've done over the years, is to compile this library of bypassed knowledge. So tell us about that.
David, please. It's interesting because just before we were talking, what do people think about you, or how do you introduce yourself? And I would say a caretaker. In this library is 14,000 physical books dating to 1492, but I have an additional 30,000 immediate PDFs dating to 1502, which means when somebody's in here, there is virtually 45,000 items dating again back hundreds of years. And a lot of times people ask me, well, have you read this book by this author? And I'll say, was he or she born after 1920? And they go, well, yes. And I go, no, I haven't. No,
I haven't read it.
I don't know. It's not because I don't think people who write currently have it wrong, but a lot of wisdom, a lot of knowledge has been bypassed. Just because the ancients didn't have fast cars and computers doesn't mean they didn't have a better understanding of nature, of how energies work and vibrations. So I am caretaking that this information is not lost.
It's not a library. It's not the Dewey Decimal System. It is a library of curated works that, I mean, how would you describe the umbrella under which all of this work fits? Or is it esoteric? How would you do that? What is it?
What do you call your show? What is
Curiosity.
The name of it? There you go. So this library consists of individuals who, when I was researching and curious about who stimulated them and who did they follow, then I would keep tracing things back and back and back. So if I read about an individual from 1750 who said he was inspired by names you're going to recognize, Plato, Pythagoras, Socrates, then I started collecting everything on those people and as they use references. So when anybody looks at anything in this library and it's got references, those references are also in this library.
Oh, wow.
And it is a accumulation of health, science, esoteric information, alchemy, dreams. And if the next question, which most people ask, well, there's two questions people ask. The biggest one is, have I read everything in here? And of course, being the nature I am, I go, no, only about 97%, which of course is not true. But the other thing is, people ask how I got some of the very rare materials that are located in here, including lost healing devices, laboratory notes. I was directed through dreams, which I've had since my early 20s. In the dream, I was directed where to go or given phone numbers. And when I would call the number or go to a location, I was given materials which are housed in this library. So I know I interjected a little esoteric in there, but the reality is, in my dreams, I was given specific places to go. And anybody who enters in here will believe exactly what I'm saying, because they will be holding materials that nobody on the internet even knows where they are.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so So all of a sudden when you were 20, you started getting, or 20 in your 20s, you were sort of pointed in a direction, right? I mean, it's not a collection of everything.
Correct.
It's the, you were drawn or you were pushed, one or the other, in particular directions.
Yes.
And I'm curious if, like, did you grow up in a family where those directions were valued? Were like, you know, was your family sitting around the fire at night reading Aleister Crowley, or like, why, where did this come from? Or or did you answer that question? Is it dreams?
No, well, I have an athletic scholarship. I have a PhD in finance. And so my life was business, reality. And then I met a Native American Indian who was an actual trans medium, which means a voice spoke through him, which was so contrary to my life, my background, my family. And after this reading, quote reading, the individual said all my future guidance would come in my dreams. I remember at 23 years old going,
yeah, whatever.
I don't dream. What? And if I do, it's something silly. I went 1 week without sleeping, David, because I kept thinking, I'm going to have a dream. I'm going to have a dream about my future. So after a week, I was so dog tired. I had a dream. And because of that dream, which I could relate very quickly, if you choose, that set me off. And after that, I had 3 and 4 dreams a night for the next 3 months on every phase of my personality, my likes, my dislikes, commentaries. And then I started getting telephone numbers, just a telephone number. Now I'm 23 years old. I'm going,
wait a minute, a telephone number in the dream?
Yes, yes.
Oh, well. And you called, and it was actually chock full of information. I mean, there was something about that telephone number, the person who you called, et cetera, that led you to something.
That is correct. So your question was, how did I get segued into here? That led me into a life of looking at deeper aspects, spirituality, psychology, philosophy, leads me into metaphysics and dreams, leads me into the Renaissance area and the Greeks and Pythagoras, and voila, what starts as one shelf in a bookcase ends up to be 56 bookcases and a higher mortgage on my house to house it.
Yeah, well, it certainly is a grand room. I hadn't planned to ask this question, but you know, at some point we all pass. That's an amazing collection. So where does it go?
Well, it is an accumulation also of people I have met throughout my life who I met for 20 minutes to an hour, and when they passed away, they left their collection in their will to me. Now, in the Los Angeles area,
I got the mortgage.
That's right, the higher. In the Los Angeles area was a great philosopher named Manly P. Hall,
yes,
who was at the Philosophical Research Society. And when I was 27 years old, somebody told me about him. I went to a meeting, and as a result, and that would be a little longer story, I ended up meeting his head librarian. I had a dream. I gave it to her. She gave it to Mr. Hall. He calls me 3 days later to his home, and he says, "Who are you?" Now, these words came out of me. I said, "I'm a student. What do you want from me? I want to go into your private vault." Now, in the 80s, his private vault held rare alchemical texts that were not and had not been reprinted. And he allowed me, because that calling card, my dream was how we wanted to build the Philosophical Research Society in 1928. but he didn't have enough money. And in 1932, he built it. So I was born in 49. He knew there's no way I would know. I was given him a calling card. The right person will come to me, and they will be the new keeper of the materials. Because, hey, this is curiosity, and therefore these things are handed down over and over to care keepers and the caretakers of this material. And there are extremely rare materials in this library. It looks nice with bindings, which you see, but there is inner quadrants here of materials that we're just caretaking. And the next caretaker will let me know it's their time, and they will take care of it.
Yeah, it's a really interesting. And did you ever imagine growing up you would be talking like this,
David? Imagine with the sports and the background, I'm going, I want to be a librarian when I grow up. that would never happen.
We should say, just, you know, as a footnote, you were a sought after championship runner in college, and overcame, as I recall, you overcame an injury that you were not supposed to overcome.
Correct.
And then went on from that. You also were a beach volleyball player. Wasn't it Wilt Chamberlain? You and Wilt Chamberlain partnered up in beach volleyball.
Can you imagine? I would turn to Wilt and go, I want to be a librarian.
Be a librarian, Wilt.
when I get off the beach, Wiltie. No, yeah. By the way, he was an incredibly beautiful man, just that was great. So yes, so I have a sports background and a business. No, I did not figure that I would be in esoteric philosophical dreams. No.
Has this changed how you live your life? I mean, other than having to take care of all this of the library, but in terms of your practices, in terms of what you do with other people. And the other thing which I didn't ask, which I want to, so maybe you can weave it in there. There's this accumulation of extraordinary and esoteric and, you know, perhaps long forgotten knowledge that is potentially useful to people. How do they use, or do they, how is this put to use? Other than keep taking care so that it's preserved, how is it put to use?
Well, let's take your first question first, and that is, I would say the most profound change in my life was a concept of reincarnation that on the surface I could never explain people's concept that it's a one-shot deal, and this person's born and bathes in the Ganges River and is missing a leg and an arm, and this person's a male, and this woman looks beautiful, and each person lives their life, and then they get to sit at the right hand of God if they're lucky. And so that concept, for me personally, just didn't jive. So as I got into reincarnation and this concept, understanding that that is a major tenet in a lot of philosophies, and a lot of the, whether it was Pythagoras and Plato and Socrates, they all believed, again, in reincarnation, and even stated that they knew some of their past lives. And through my dreams, I experienced episodes which would lead me to believe that, yes. Now, in my first, quote, reading when I was young, I was given a handful of traits and characteristics. In other words, in this reading, this channel didn't say, well, you were the Queen of Sheba, you were a king. What was said was, because of this living, you don't drink, or you stay away from dark-haired Spanish young ladies, or you don't. And I was going, how's that possible? I'm an athlete. They're always drinking brewskis. They're for somebody to guess that I haven't drank, or I shied away from dark-haired Spanish young ladies and I was told why in this reading, it led me to understand there's more to life. And as I meet people and can see that the lifestyle they're living almost reflects a lifestyle from someone from 1920 or the 1850s or the 1700s. We are carrying this luggage from past times into our current life. So your question was, how has it allowed me, or how has it influenced my life? Yes. And it gives me a better understanding of why people are doing what they're doing, acting like they're acting, adamant about things they're adamant. And so that, of course, is a much longer discussion of what I would do with that. And in my counseling work over the last 50 years, I have been able, through guidance that I hear while I'm consciously speaking and telling it to the person, and then they react and they have immediate changes in their life.
So you have also taken on a role of counselor for people, or
for 50 years I have done that.
Uh-huh. So,
and in the health and the spiritual aspects. Now I'm going to jump to your second question.
So people come knocking on the door,
yes,
seeking solutions, and they come to you and they say, correct, hey, or they're sent to you by somebody.
Correct.
Right. Got it. Okay.
That has been actually my main task at my nonprofit World Research Foundation, is people have had health problems. Mm-hmm. And the organization and the materials here is every alternative holistic approach from ancient times to the present from all over the world. So people will come asking about their options, and that is what I present. What are your options? Well, you can do homeopathy, you can do acupuncture, you can do magnetic therapy, color therapy. So I'm like a smorgasbord. The idea is to present as many plates of options for an individual. For me, David, the worst thing in the world in any phase is if you don't have options. You're forced to do something. So for the last 50 years, I've counseled in the health field with people who were either told there's nothing more medicine can do, or they don't like their options. But then it's also happened in the spiritual aspect, because, how do I say this? Earlier, people would have instantaneous remissions from our work with them. And so that word got out, and people were coming for spiritual counseling. They had things happening in their life that they didn't know what to do with these energies. They could see things, they could hear things. And so it's been both worlds for me, the spiritual and that. Now, your second question was, how do they find out? And I have about 100 videos on less complicated, my YouTube channel, Dr. Stephen A. Ross, Less Complicated, and my writings at lesscomplicated.net. So that is how I put things out. Now, I will say this. I have never charged one penny for any counseling I have ever done in the esoteric or the health field, because to me, it is a gift. I do charge when I do business consulting. So that is how I keep myself. But I can't charge for consulting with people when I am given information beyond my physical pay grade.
and just because, did you decide that? Did you decide that you would not charge, or were you'll excuse the expression, told somehow that that's not okay?
No, because I was also told something free has no value, so one must be careful. That is something that I personally have felt. I can distinguish and separate, David, what is coming through me, Stephen Ross, and what is coming through a higher aspect of myself, which for all intents and purposes, let's just call higher self, which every single person has. That's that still small voice that if we take one more second and don't react to something, there is that voice that comes through and says, perhaps you should approach it this way. But if we're real adamant, we just go, I'm just going to do a knee-jerk. No. So listening to that, I decided if I'm giving my time for business acumen, which I went to school for, I'm charging. But for counseling, I have never charged.
You sent me a few books. I was particularly, well, there's two of them that really are intriguing, but the Royal Rife, which is a name I had never heard before. But that doesn't mean anything because there's a lot of names I haven't heard before. But and the Universal Microscope. Would you sort of fill us in about what that is? Because it sounds remarkable.
Yes. And I have to say, when I started talking about this in the 80s, there were virtually no websites. Now there's a lot. A chauffeur named Royal Rife in the early 1900s felt that he could build a better microscope than the microscopes that existed. And so he built five different microscopes, of which the largest was called the Universal Microscope. Now, if I just slightly...
Yeah, please.
So here's a picture of the Universal Microscope, which was finished in 1933 and is 10 times more powerful than any other light source microscope that was built before or since. Now listen to what I'm saying. 1933.
It is
10 times more powerful than any other light source microscope. Now, people hear about the electron microscope and it is 1 million, 2 million. A light source microscope was that little microscopes that we used in school, and it magnified about 1,800. And it is limited because of a beam of light and the science behind it. They can only get magnification of about 1,800. This universal microscope got 60,000 diameters. And when they looked through this microscope, because of its unique properties, any microbe or bacteria glowed in its own unique color.
Okay, now, wait a second. Slow down. Say this again, because this is brand new information here.
Yes.
So this fellow who was, you said he was a chauffeur?
He was a chauffeur for a man named Timken who built ball bearings in San Diego.
Okay,
and
so
Timken built him a laboratory in San Diego that would be the equivalent of $1 million to let his chauffeur demonstrate whether he could create a better mousetrap.
So this guy was obviously knew something about microscopes. He was had some sort of background in that, and he built a microscope, a light source microscope, that is that much powerful and more powerful than microscopes today?
Now, here's the difference, David. The electron puts a specimen in a vacuum, bombards it with electrons so they cannot look at live specimens. A light source microscope, you can watch live substances. So that would be the difference. So who cares if I can get 2 million magnification if I'm looking at a dead object versus watching something live? And so the doctors, now you see a picture here of a dinner party held in Pasadena, California in 1931, celebrating the end of disease and illness, because these doctors from the Mayo Clinic, Northwestern, John Hopkins, USC, knew the work that Royal Rife did, and they discovered the frequency to destroy viruses and bacteria for 60 diseases and illnesses.
Okay, slow down. They could see these things, and when you said there was something about they glowed uniquely.
Wow.
Each one had a characteristic sort of light or
yeah.
glow yeah. to it.
Well, they took samples of good example. So they took a woman's breast cancer tumor. They knew that it was tumorous. And when they took a slice and put it under the microscope, cancer shows up as a ruby red color under the microscope. Tuberculosis is an emerald green.
Is there something about the, it's so the light is not changing. The light source is not changing. It's the same, it's consistent light source that's hitting various objects, and the objects glow different colors.
Because he had counter rotating prisms in this mechanism, and he did something unique called heterodyning. But people hear of heterodyning in sound. You take one sound and another sound, you heterodyne, you put them together, you get a third sound. This Royal Rife heterodyned light. So with those counter-rotating prisms and a side and a bottom light source, the life frequency of elements glowed in their own unique color. This is why this is so amazing. And by the way, this was written up in the Smithsonian Institute, 1944. The Smithsonian is the publishing arm of the U.S. government. And so they reported what their people saw when they went to the Rife laboratories. Think of a singer, a man or woman who hits a note and breaks glass.
Yeah.
The resonant frequency of the glass is right. equal. So they do it. These colors that were illuminated were the life frequency. And so they got a frequency generator. The microscope wasn't destroying. There was a frequency generator beaming the exact frequency of that color at the microbe.
And electromagnetic frequency. Yeah.
And just okay. like the singer breaks a glass, yeah. that element was shattered, whether it was cancer or any other virus associated with other diseases and illnesses.
So, okay, so great step forward for
this humanity, for the world.
So why haven't we heard of this?
Because it's not a pharmaceutical. It would take us out of chemistry and put us in physics. Think about it. If we could address all diseases and illnesses at the frequency level, like people like Nikola Tesla said, everything is frequency, then we're not doing chemicals. Now, what determines death? Heartbeat and brain waves. Those are electrical. We are electrical beings. And this would take us out of the world of pharmaceuticals and bring us more into the world of physics, which we are now starting to get back into. So it's not like nobody knew about this, but the pressure coming from the pharmaceutical industry. But now there's another caveat that if I don't say this on this show, I will be very remiss, because there's many people running around, you haven't heard, with Rife machines, Rife devices, and I'm going to make this statement. Those are not Rife machines. They are not the frequencies that he developed in the 1930s, And the reason I am adamant about that is this is the logbook, the research logbook from Royal Rife's laboratory in the 20s, of where he only developed 60 frequencies. But these people who are now pushing these Rife machines have 1,000 and 10,000. So Royal Rife, his research is sound. I'm not saying machines don't work, but they should not be called Rife machines.
Okay, but for just a moment.
Yes.
Get back to the, is there an awareness? Are you aware of the drama that went around? I mean, the suggestion is that because of the clout of the pharmaceutical industry, a promising technology was somehow never allowed to fulfill its promise. What are you showing us?
I'm showing you the doctors, of which I have 500 personal letters of all these doctors, yeah, back and forth, not letters written for television, but they're actual letters from the 20s and 30s. So yes, I know exactly what was going on. I know the pressure that they were under and who put that pressure on them from the pharmaceutical side. So yes, I'm very familiar. Now, I've also, you know, I'm sorry, but because we're shotgunning this, one of my books, I tell the life story of my association with this microscope, the ups, the downs, the people who tried to get it from me, because I had that microscope physically in my possession for 2 years. Nobody knows where that Rife microscope is, but I will tell you it is safe and it is in the hands of somebody that I am aware of, so it still exists. And if anybody...
Was it a one of a kind? Or is it a one?
It's, I mean, the only one. Yes.
It's the only one that was ever made, this particular universal microscope.
Yes, they could do this. And for anybody who's interested, because I am 75 now, I have printed those 60 frequencies that Rife developed in 1933, so they'll never be lost.
Mm.
I'm not just holding on to them. If people really want to know the true story, David, it was an incredible, it would have changed the paradigm of medicine, but the pharmaceuticals are still the biggest commercials on TV.
Yeah, sure.
Exactly. You know, when you and I were growing up, it was cigarettes. Your younger audience doesn't realize every other commercial. Yes, that's right. But I'm familiar with it because having had the microscope, 500 personal.
How did you come upon this? Like, how did you come upon the microscope? Tell me, you're going to tell me it's a dream, right? It was in a dream?
Yes.
It was. Of course it was.
Of course. I was directed one night, I have a dream. Now, in the Los Angeles area was an incredible bookstore called the Bodie Tree Bookstore.
Yeah.
I had a dream to go to the Bodie Tree Bookstore, the used book section, go to a bookcase and reach behind the books on one of the shelves. Behind the books. So I go to the Bodie Tree Bookstore, go to the used books, reach behind, pick up a book that nobody could possibly see because it's sitting sideways, New Light on Therapeutic Energies, out of print, Mark Gallard. I opened it up, chapter 5, the Rife microscope, which I had never heard of. This was 1984. And so I call a friend of mine, Dr. Harry Lusk, and Harry was 90 years old. And I said, Harry, have you ever heard of something called the Rife microscope? And Harry says to me, well, when I was a young man, so I already knew this was a long time ago, there was word of a super microscope that surpassed every other microscope. And then Harry, who is the president of Hollywood Presbyterian Hospital, said, I met a man who claimed he had the microscope. And I said, wow, do you have a contact for this man? And he said, Steve, that was 18 years ago. I tried to call the number, and the next day Harry calls me. I'm looking you eyeball to eyeball. Harry goes, Steve, Harry, what's the matter? I stepped out of bed, and on the floor was the phone number of this man. I said, Harry, are you kidding me? He goes, no. I said, maybe it was there all the time. He goes, no. I've moved three times. Rest of the story, I called the number, I reach, and 1 year later, I had the microscope.
And you're using the past tense. Did you intentionally give it to someone else to keep it safe?
That is an entire story, because I did a three-hour show on KABC Radio, Open Minds, when it was still in existence in 1986. It was the largest radio program in the United States, Bill Jenkins. And after that, when we had the microscope, I was getting 2,000 to 3,000 calls every month.
Oh, wow.
Every month, which went on for years. So do not have it here. Do not have it in my possession. But mm-hmm. I'm fully aware an associate has it, where it is, and it's safe.
And is there any, has there been any conversation about, for lack of a better way to put it, reverse engineering this microscope and making it more accessible to people?
Nobody can figure out how his sequence of crystals were in the barrel of this microscope. There's been a lot of people who have tried. There's been some people who get close. But if you look at a normal microscope, it has a very, very thin barrel. If you look at this microscope, you're going to notice from the eyepiece down, it's very, very long.
Yeah.
And so inside that barrel were crystals that forced the light beam to stay narrow. And this is why he was getting the 60,000 magnification, where other microscopes, the light beam diffuses, and they're only able to get about 1,800 diameters. So he was very clever. What is amazing to me is somebody has to explain every other development in microscopes, they won a Nobel Prize except for Rife. And if you go to the Wikipedia, which to me is the worst source in the world, they will say, oh, the Rife microscope purportedly did this. And they looked at things, they looked at colors, but nobody could figure it out. That is an out and out lie and nonsense. That's BS. Mm. Of course they knew what they were looking at. Doctors, Rosenau of the Mayo Clinic, Kendall of Northwestern, Lewells Barker, John Hopkins. These guys were not dummies. They knew what was going on. They knew what they had. Those doctors were celebrating. And by the way, that was written up in the Los Angeles Times, which I have in my book. These doctors were celebrating the greatest discovery of microscopy. And how, and more people know about it now. You didn't.
No.
I should have won a Nobel Prize. No. You're anything but that. You're curious. And my whole life can be summed up, David, like you. I'm just curious. I make no boundaries. I'm the dreams. I remember when I told my dad, who worked at Lockheed Aircraft in their stealth program, that I thought dreams had meaning. And my dad was going, come on. Come on, dreams. Until I started getting dreams that said what was going to happen 5 days, a week, a month, 6 months in advance. And then my folks became my greatest supporters, because they knew I wrote the dream down. and it took place.
And either you're just the greatest fiction storyteller alive, or there's something to this and worth.
Hey, hearing. David. Now, if we met at a party, and I told you and a group, and had them entertain, people go right. But when you set foot in my space, and you can touch the original materials, that people wonder, where'd that go? Was it really real? Did it happen? That is what this entire facility is comprised of. Things that have been lost and overlooked. And I'm recovering through dreams.
Do you have to spend a lot of time? It's a technical question, I guess. Do you have to spend a lot of time or energy or whatever, you know, books, pages, et cetera, depending upon what they're made of, they deteriorate. So how do you assure that you can preserve them? Like, are there things that you have to keep in special conditions?
Most of my materials, the older ones, would be in climate-controlled rooms at a university, and you'd have to know a doctor or have a title to even get in that room. This room that you're looking at, I built it 24 years ago, played music in it for the 24 hours a day for the first 7 years to set the vibration, classical music, 24 hours a day. The library was added about 7 years ago, 56 bookcases. No. What can I tell you, David? The room is protected. The room has an extremely high vibration here. People say sometimes they hear music in here, but I'm not playing music. The classical music played 24 hours a day. It's patterned after rooms built during the Renaissance called Studio Lo, where you immerse yourself in total beauty. And so I was flying back from my office in Stuttgart. I had a vision about building this room. I had no understanding why. I came back. I tore down my patio. I built the room. And while I was building it, my voices were going, remind people of beauty, remind people of love. And then right after we started was 9/11. And then I understood to create a room reminding people of beauty, love, truth, spirituality. And that is this room.
How do people gain access to the room? People who want to look at the, do they make an appointment? How do they do that? Or do they not?
No, it's not really open to the public. They would have to be either know you or a relative of yours to get in. So
but you do have people periodically who are either researching something or searching for something for them. Yeah.
I'll give them the world. If they contact me at my addresses and tell me, what are you interested in? I will give the person as much of the world as I can. What we have in here is information. Mm-hmm. But again, putting the frequencies and the right story here, they don't have to magically get Rife's book. But it's now, I would have thousands of people in here, so it's just not possible unless they know you.
Sure.
They have to know you or be your relative.
Well, nobody really knows me, so it's fine. You're safe. You're safe.
That's not why I did it.
So, Stephen, what else should we know? Like, what's important to say about
life,
what you do, and what and well, that's yes, life is what you do, but what you do and what you've collected. It seems like there's an underlying message. Like, if the subtitles were in the picture, you know, going across the screen.
Make no boundaries. Make no boundaries. We are so much greater, us human beings, than we believe. And so my message has been based on, believe it or not, a dream that I had, which would be a good way to kind of end this session and answer your question. Right before one of my presentations here in Sedona, I had the following dream. I was walking along the ocean with all of the truth seekers and curiosity seekers of the world, all walking together. And in the distance, I saw a woman dressed in blue holding a microphone, but there was fog and smoke around her. As I got closer, it was Sophia, the goddess of wisdom. But there was smoke and fog. Now, to my right or her left were horseshoe stands with all the people who've written books and multi-level courses, and this is the answer and that's the answer. But I'm not saying they were wrong, David, but mm-hmm. what they were spilling was copying or covering absolute truth. So I thought, what are seekers supposed to do if these people are only giving us parts? And a big wind blew off the ocean, and this is a true dream. And I heard the following words: all one needs for greater enlightenment is a beautiful heart, an open mind, and a humble spirit.
Can you say that again?
A beautiful heart, an open mind, and a humble spirit, and you will reach the greatest enlightenment. And you don't need the books or the courses or the gurus. A beautiful heart, an open mind, and a humble spirit. Now, how do you do that? With love, in love, and through love. Mm. That is what I want at the bottom of the screen.
Mm. Got it. Yeah. Well, that, you know, that is a perfect place to close.
You're listening to Curiosity Invited with David Bryan here on LA Talk Radio.